The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, 1 in 6 will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what OneClick Upsell makes it super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that, and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes. Get your first upsell up and running. Check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners building incredible businesses and amazing lives. And it's the very end slash beginning of a new year. My favorite time of year, this is probably my favorite episode of the year to do. We've done it for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, maybe, I don't know how many years, but at least half a dozen, if not more. Bill, do you remember how many years we've been doing this?
I don't, but it's probably is 6 or 7 or more. This is my favorite episode of the year too.
It's super, super fun. And of course, we come on and pretend like we have any kind of edge on predicting the matters of the world or the universe or the e-commerce world. And even though we don't, it's still wildly entertaining to not only make predictions about this year, 2024, but look back on last year and see where we got lucky or where we just completely missed the mark on making predictions, which is probably, I don't know, if I was listening, that would be my favorite part, is just watching two people, you know, have to revisit the egregious and way over their skis predictions from the previous year, which is where we'll start, of course.
You got to keep it honest, though. Like, it's easy to make predictions and then everybody forgets about your predictions. So I think the fact that I know I got to answer to myself in a year makes me think hard before this episode.
Oh, it does. It totally does. Because you want to put these things down, but you're just like, oh man. It's like when you book that appointment, like somebody reaches out and you're like, I don't really want to book this appointment. Or this
isn't the colonoscopy appointment? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that would qualify definitely as one. Although I don't know. I think future Andrew might actually say he was actually glad he did that for not dying a painful death. But you know, like the ones where 3 months in the future, it doesn't feel real, right? Like it's a long ways away. And then 3 months comes and you're like, why didn't past Andrew take this more seriously? That is very much a part of the predictions process here, writing them down. You write a bunch down, you scratch them out. Do you do that too, I'm guessing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had to cull it down to 5 that I really believed in.
Well, we should dive into it because we got a ton to go through and only about an hour to do this all. So we're going to get right into it. So I figured first, of course, we're going to go into our predictions from 2024. And this year, we're going to have it a little bit different. I'm going to cue each one up for us, and then we're going to take a quick trip back to last year and hear about 15, 20 seconds of our prediction on it. So the first one, my first one was talking about that we're going to see 2 more blow-ups on the scale of FTX and Enron, plus a market correction. Let's go back and listen to that. I think we're going to see at least 2 more massive blow-ups on the scale of FTX, of Enron, along with another sharp 10% correction in the market. All right, Bill, and kind of per tradition, I'll kind of rate myself on this one, and then you can kind of fact check me, keep me honest. So I would say I got this one, I'd say 2/3 right. And the two ones, so these weren't not fraud-based. I don't think we saw any huge, massive fraud-based things that brought down on the level of FTX or Enron. But the two that come to mind for me is one, Silicon Valley Bank, right? March 10th, I don't think anyone would have seen, even 3 or 4 days before, the speed at which this collapsed was pretty staggering. And it wasn't fraud, but it was really, really poor interest rate risk hedging. I believe what happened in a nutshell is they just bought way too many long-dated treasuries that went down dramatically as interest rates rose, and it caused a bank run, and the whole thing went under. And then secondly, Credit Suisse, probably less so. I think they've kind of had a longer track record of kind of, you know, a little bit of mismanagement. But still, the fact that like that long-standing of an institution also pretty much went under. I'm less familiar with the details there, but had to get bought out of, you know, more or less bankruptcy, I believe. So not fraud-based, but 2 pretty big giants went down in unsuspected ways. So I'm going to give myself 60%, 2/3 on this.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing, the SVB one, in retrospect, it seems so obvious, right? But you know, nobody saw it coming. So you're right. And that was kind of both SVB and Credit Suisse were interest rate related, which is going to play into some of our future predictions too.
Yeah, I think you and I may have a couple. And we have not shared our predictions with each other on this, so which always makes it interesting because you can get the real-time reactions on these. Bill, why don't you go through your first prediction from last year? And your first prediction was that we were going to see a recession in 2023. Let's go back and listen to that.
I think a recession is coming in 2023. By the way, I don't think people are going to like this prediction. Low prices become even more important. Consumers are going to trade down. They're going to be on budgets. They're going to care about pricing and discounts, which that's going to put pressure on margins.
All right, Bill, how would you grade yourself on this one?
I don't know. I don't think I get a lot of marks. I mean, the market is up, this, which is crazy this year. I did not see that coming, even with interest rates being up. I did predict that recession would moderate in the back half of the year. So that's a plus. I get credit for that. But honestly, I was sure we were going to have a recession this year, and it looks like the soft landing might be a reality.
Yeah. I mean, technically, recession is what, like two quarters of negative GDP growth if you're like, you know, super, super geeky economist. But even, which I don't think we had, but even the market, like it's weird. The hiring market seems a little bit stronger for what we'll talk about here in a minute. But even just overall, hiring market is like unemployment still really low. It's starting to feel weaker, but I don't think anyone would say we've hit a recession quite yet. So
no, so I don't get much credit for that one.
Yeah,
it's a tough one. I'm happy. Like, that's great. Considered re-predicting it again for next year, but I'm not sure what's going to happen next year.
This is really just an opportunity for you and I to hedge either way. Like, it's a win-win situation, right? Like, you have a recession, you know, that's unfortunate, but then you actually get a point on the, I thought about that too. Right. Like, make some bets.
I lost tons of money, but at least I was right on my ECF podcast prediction.
100%. A slight silver lining. All right. My second prediction from last year was about the labor market. Let's go ahead and hear that one from last year. So mine is, we're going to see the labor market turned dramatically in 2023. We'll still have some positions, I think, that are harder to outsource. But in general, I think it's going to be a big trend. And the labor market's going to be much more favorable for companies than employees probably by the end of next year. So again, a labor market turning dramatically in 2023. I think we both had this one, Bill. So maybe we can both self-rate ourselves on the prediction. I would give myself maybe half credit for this. You look at the unemployment, I should look these numbers up. The unemployment rate overall has not changed hardly at all. I think it was 3.5% seasonally adjusted last December. It's about 3.7% in November of this year. But if you look anecdotally, and maybe it's just because we're more tech focused and e-commerce focused, a lot of tech layoffs, seen those the last, you know, 6 to 9 months. It seems like for hiring, candidates can't just throw out crazy expectations and offers and expect to get them. They're having to work more. They don't have quite as much leverage. So I feel for kind of the positions that a lot of people listening to this podcast for, you know, not super entry level, but medium to leadership roles, I think those have gotten swung back the other direction towards employers, but still, I mean, really low unemployment overall. So I'd give myself 50%. What do you think?
Yeah. And I mean, I think my prediction was a little bit more that it would get a lot easier to hire in 2023 than it was in 2022. You know, thinking back to when we recorded the end of 2022, the labor market was just so tight. It was really hard to hire. You know, remote workers had all kinds of options. You know, even in-person labor, the per hour rate was through the roof. Hiring warehouse labor was really hard. People were really feeling a pinch. And I predicted that it would swing back to kind of more employer power in 2023. And I have felt that as an employer. I found it easier to recruit higher quality talent. They haven't had completely absurd asks. It just feels like a more balanced supply-demand market now.
Yeah, agreed. So what would you give yourself on your prediction from last year?
I think it's pretty good. 6 or 7.
6 or 7? 70%. I like it. Your next one from last year was about domestic sourcing. So let's go ahead and listen to that one.
I actually shared your prediction that the labor market is about to become, from an employer's perspective, very, very strong. I mean, at least on our side, you know, for the jobs that we have posted domestically, we have seen more and much higher quality candidates, you know, now in Q4 than we have seen in Q1 and Q2.
All right, Bill. So domestic sourcing coming back. How do you think that played out?
So I have to drink my own medicine here. This was not a very smart prediction. It was not specific, measurable, actionable, relevant, and time bound. That to come back is not really that specific. But I do think, you know, there was some element of this. A lot of people are trying to re-onshore stuff, you know, in Mexico, you know, in other places that are not China. I mean, you've got a big growth in Vietnam, in India, you know, in Mexico, et cetera. But at the same time, Trans-Pacific ocean freight rates are as low as they've been in years and years. So, you know, I think most of the onshoring is a result of instability in China, people not wanting exposure to that, not necessarily shipping rates.
You also had the tough trend of a lot of Chinese factories after overproduction through COVID are much drier and much, you know, looking for work much more than they were before. So, which obviously is affecting rates. So that's also a trend that's making it difficult as well. So,
yeah. But again, like that's probably a good thing, right? Our goods are cheaper. It's cheap to ship them here from China. You know, it's not the end of the world.
No, I agree with you. I mean, definitely a good thing for most people listening, for the American consumer. But if I'm running a business, I think still, if I had the choice between slightly higher cost of goods, but easier logistical issues and being able to get to the source faster domestically, I would pick domestic over. It seems like it would simplify things so much. Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, you can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion. This next one should be fun. So next one's about Twitter. So let's go ahead and listen to my predictions about Twitter. And this is right when you'll hear it here, right after Elon purchased Twitter, and there was a whole lot of a drama over that. So let's take a listen to that. I think Twitter is going to come out the other side of the whole Elon Musk acquisition, layoffs, 5-minute news cycle with what's happening there in a strong or reasonably strong position. All right. So this one, Bill, I'm real interested to hear how you critique my self-grading of this one. I think for me, I came through, and again, Twitter's had so many different drama periods over the last year. At this time, this is when Elon took over. He fired 70% of the team. People thought that just the thing was gonna go down in flames. And I think Twitter probably fared better in the short to medium term operationally than most people expected. Obviously, there was a lot of stuff and some turmoil and some content moderation issues, but I think they did better. I think it's hard to argue that there was not some fat that was reasonably cut in terms of the operations there. I think the other thing though, but if you look fast forward to a year, you know, they've had 30% decline in the number of people actively tweeting. I think their advertising revenue was down 50% this summer. That was even before the most recent thing and some of Elon's more colorful comments about advertisers recently. So, I'm only going to give myself about 25% on this one out of 100 because, yeah, I think I still use Twitter. I know you still use Twitter. But I think overall, the platform has, you know, the rebrand to X. I mean, he's a brilliant genius and done a lot of amazing things. But I think it's harder to say Twitter is healthier today than it was a year ago. So, Bill, your thoughts?
I mean, you got to remember though, where we were a year ago, like everybody was convinced like you were going to load the browser tab and it wasn't going to load. Like,
you remember that.
Right. Like all of the journalists were like, oh my gosh, he laid off everybody. The company's going to zero, you know, et cetera. Yeah. And that clearly did not happen. You know, they cut like 80% of their headcount and like the website is still up. So the most dire predictions did not come true, in fairness to you. But, and also like Facebook, you know, they launched their Threads product and like for about a hot week, it looked like it might work, but it's a ghost town and everybody's right back to Twitter. So I think to some degree, like, is Twitter a better place than it was? Not necessarily. I think it might be a freer speech place than it was, you know, all that's come out about all of the censorship that was going on before Elon owned it. But I don't know that it's a better place as a, from a user experience point of view.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd agree with that. So, all right, maybe I'll upgrade myself to 40% on that one. But the existential crisis was averted, which was a big part of the prediction. So, although maybe it's just a slower existential crisis, we'll see. All right, Bill, your next one that you had last year was about the e-com M&A market. So let's go ahead and listen to that one.
The e-com M&A market remains pretty sleepy. I already mentioned earlier in this episode that it's been pretty dead for most of the back half of this year, 2022. I think it will stay pretty sleepy for almost all of 2023, essentially as a direct result of interest rates being high.
Bill, so did the M&A market remain sleepy throughout the year? Thoughts on this?
From my perspective, yes. I mean, even in a, and people, some are going to be in the comments going, this company sold for $1 zillion. Like, yes, in any slow M&A market, there are exceptions. But, you know, multiples were kind of, they didn't go back to the aggregator levels that people experienced in 2021 and early 2022. You know, decent businesses still sold. You know, you can still sell an e-commerce business for, you know, 3 to 3.5 times, kind of like it was pre-aggregator world. So like, I don't know. I think I'm pretty right on this, like 9 or 10 out of 10. I mean, if anything, like Thrasio's bankrupt now. I didn't go so far as to predict that last year, I don't think, but you know, Thrasio's toast. Like there's no bid holding these e-com multiples up like there used to be with cheap aggregator money. So I think this was spot on.
Yeah, 100%. I'll give you a 10 out of 10 out of this one. I mean, it's just been June 2022 was probably, you know, late spring was probably the peak of M&A and it's just fallen off of a cliff across the board. Maybe a few little shoots we're seeing a little bit more, but yeah, in general, 18 months, and especially 2023 was just, I mean, we were, as you know, we sold our interest in a company of ECF Capital the last couple of weeks. And in doing the deal, like it was much harder than normal to try to get an idea of like, okay, what's a reasonable valuation? Because there's just not, things are not selling as much. There's just not as many data points. So yeah, I think you nailed this one, man.
Yeah. Some businesses are still selling. Like you can still sell a business for, you know, 3.5x or even maybe 4x, but like you're not seeing Amazon FBA businesses clear the market at 6x, you know, SDE or anything. So it's just not happening. I think M&A has stayed pretty sleepy.
Yeah. Great prediction. My next prediction, we'll go back, was about interest rates and the Fed. So let's go ahead and listen to that one. I think the Fed is going to slowly keep raising rates through at least July of 2023. But I think we're going to probably see rates continue to increase, maybe not at 75 basis points. I think we'd probably see the next couple will be maybe 50, maybe one or two more at 50, and then some 25 basis point raises through, let's say, the summer before it tapers off. So as you heard, the Fed's going to stop raising rates in the summer of 2023. We'd probably see a couple, you know, 25 basis points, or 50 basis points, only 25. And I think I nailed this one. I'm going to give myself 10 out of 10 on this one. I think I got the timing right. I think I got the starting with 50 basis points in December, which is right after we recorded, and then, you know, going down to 25. So more luck than anything else. But I think, yeah, this played out pretty much exactly like I predicted. Oh, it's funny, the Fed, actually, do you know what they did today? Bill, did you see what the Fed did before we hopped on here?
They did. They're going to hold. They announced they're going to hold and they're going to cut 3 times next year. I bet the market is through the roof.
Right? No, did it really?
I don't know. I don't know. I just heard the news bite.
Oh my goodness. All right, we got to check this out here. Well, that puts you, that's unfortunate for one of my predictions.
We'll come to that in a minute. Well, but that doesn't matter because you, a year ahead of time, basically exactly predicted the Fed's actions. And I'm sure you traded on that, right? So you're picking me up for ECF Live in your private jet this year from all of your...
Oh, 100%. 100%. We took out a heat.
You should be a gazillionaire.
We took out a HELOC on the house, man. I mean, we put it all on the interest rate swaps. I mean, it's not a nice private jet. It's like, I mean, one of the smaller ones, but yeah, we'll be picking you up.
Great. So. Let's do it. Sucks to be right and not make any money because okay. You were right.
Man, I was so excited to do this one. And then, okay, well, you'll hear my pain in our predictions episode here. Never has one of my predictions been proven. All right, we'll wait for
that. On the episode? Okay, good work.
A new sense of, a new level of humility is going to be coming. All right, Bill, your last one was about plugins for Zendesk, Gorgeous, other help desk software in the AI space. Let's listen to that one.
I think 2023 is the first year that we in e-commerce and maybe professionals more generally are going to start to actually use AI in our day-to-day work. And that'll show up in things like a plugin for Zendesk or Gorgeous that will let you generate a templated response on the fly using AI, edit it, and send it.
All right, Bill, so how do you think this one played out in terms of AI and help desk technology for the year?
I think pretty much every major help desk platform has AI built in right now. So I think I crushed it, 10 out of 10.
Yeah. What do you use for your help desk or your customer support?
Funny you should ask. We are on Gorgeous. They have really rubbed me the wrong way on their pricing model, where they have basically started to charge a dollar every time a rule runs. And then they go, well, it's because there's a GPT call behind it. And I go, no, like if this, then that is an algorithm. That's not a GPT call. You're not charging me a dollar for that. So anyway, this is not a rant, but they've really rubbed me the wrong way. So we are pretty sure we're going to switch to Rich Panel right now, which has really cool built-in AI also.
Rich Panel. Okay. I hadn't even heard of them. Interesting.
I hadn't either until I think I asked on the ECF forum and got a ton of responses about Rich Panel.
Very cool. I need to go dive in there and check them out. We use Help Scout. How often, I don't think we probably get the level of inbound tickets that you do from members and other things, but are you using their AI to answer a lot of your support queries? Or is it like, because I feel like for us, we have that technology in Help Scout. We almost completely use either pre-save macros or a human goes in and does it, but it's not. So how much are you using that technology?
Not a ton in Gorgeous. I think we're going to use it a ton in Rich Panel because they actually train a model on your history. Rich Panel does. Ooh, so like they're pulling nice. In as we speak, they're importing all of our old Gorgeous tickets. And then we can hit train and it'll take like a day and it trains a model on all of the old tickets. I think it's going to smash. I'm very excited about it.
That's super cool. Nice. Well, excellent prediction. My last prediction for the year was actually, no, I have two more. Excuse me. One was, I think Shopify will either sell or fight off a hostile takeover attempt of the company the next year. And let's go ahead and actually, instead of playing the prediction, let's go ahead and hear your rebuttal to it, which I think is still seared into my brain. So let's hear that. My next prediction, and this is kind of this is going a little bit on the ledge, but I'm going to do it. I think Shopify will either sell or have to fight off a hostile takeover attempt of the company in the next year. And Bill, I don't know if you saw this, but actually right after they announced the Fed was cutting three times next year, Shopify actually announced that they had just been acquired by Adobe, which is amazing. This saves me from the humiliation and the predictions around.
So it was going to be announced that E-commerce Fuel had initiated a hostile takeover of Shopify. E-commerce Fuel Capital's best investment, hostile takeover of Shopify.
Oh man, we're going to have to do some fundraising for that one. So look in your inboxes soon. I've missed this one by a mile. No hostile takeover attempt. Did not sell, of course. So missed this one. Massive swing and a miss at the plate. But yeah. So well thought through, Bill. I should have listened to you.
And the stock, by the way, has doubled during the year, for what it's worth.
It has. So it is a little bit, finally ended up getting, felt like I was very late to the party on the Shopify stock. Bought it when it was falling off a cliff 18 months ago. And that's been a good move. Do you own Shopify still?
I do still. I mean, it's not down from the highs, but it's way up from my entry point, which was like IPO price.
Oh, you got it at the IPO?
Close. Yeah.
Dang.
Still holding. Well played, sir. I can't sell Absolutely. It now. The unrealized gain is absurd. I owed so many taxes.
Your last prediction, Bill, from 2023. Oh, actually, no, I think that was all your predictions. So I had one more. My final one was, I think Google is going to roll out their own chat style search option before the end of the year. Let's go ahead and give that a quick listen. And I think Google is going to roll out their own chat styled search option before the end of the year. And I think I get credit for this one. So it's not prominent. If you go to Google and just type in as usual, you don't see anything. But if you go into Google Labs and you enable search generative experience, you're going to get something where at first blush, it looks like it's just kind of summarizing the information for you at the top of the page, an AI style thing. But if you actually look lower, there's a little search box. You can actually ask it to do things. So I actually asked it to tell me a story about four or five random things in ChatGPT style. It spit one out for me. So not quite 100% what I was envisioning. It's not prominent. It's not mainstream yet, but I'll give myself 8 out of 10 on this one. So do you use this, Bill? Do you use SGE for Google at all?
A little bit. It's on and it very rarely helps me, to be honest. Like their snippets were better.
Yeah. It hasn't been super impressive. I agree, but it's out there. And
but there's also, by the way, like you were totally right though. This is a 10 out of 10 because you forgot Bard. I mean, Bard is ChatGPT, but Google, bard.google.com. This is 10 out of 10. You were right.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess it's not as prominent as you would expect it to be. So
no, but bard.google.com. It's right there. Chat's just like ChatGPT. You were exactly right. 10 out of 10.
Yeah. All right, I'll take it. I'll take the upgrade because I'm going to need it for where we're going here on the prediction front. So let's. That's it. That's the books for last year. Let's forget any of the mistakes we made and assume we know everything here and look into the future. Hey, Andrew, jumping in here quickly. We are actually going to be doing the second part of this, our 2024 predictions after the new year. It's going to be the first episode dropping in 2024. So. Until then, hope you have a wonderful, wonderful holiday. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And we will see you then. And congratulations on getting through another crazy holiday season. So enjoy that very well-deserved time with your family, friends, loved ones, and we will catch you in 2024. Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that you know founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest-rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.